I'm Erica Wise, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
Welcome to Chef Story. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton, and today I'm coming to you from Boston, sitting in the chef's table room at Monton with the newest outstanding restaurateur in America by the James Beard Foundation, 2014, Barbara Lynch. Barbara, welcome.
Thanks, Dorothy. Thanks for
coming to Boston.
So, for the two people who don't know Barbara's accolades and backgrounds, or if you're listening from someplace like St. Vincent, you have to know that Barbara has been an award-winning chef for a long time. She was one of Food & Wine's best 10 best new chefs in America when she opened her Number 9 Park on Beacon Hill. Bon Appetit rated it one of the top 25 restaurants in America. She opened many, many restaurants. In 2003, opened B&G Oysters, The Butcher Shop. In 2005, she opened a catering company, Niche Couture, Plum Produce in 2006, Stir, a demo kitchen and cookbook store in 2007. 2008, she launched Drink, a bar dedicated to the craft of a cocktail, and Sportello, her modern take on a diner. But it was in 2010 when she opened Monton. It was quickly named by Bon Appetit and Esquire as the best new restaurant. You know, she's been a finalist at the Beard Awards for many years, but it was this year that she was named the most outstanding restaurateur in America, a very rare honor among women, and one incredibly well-deserved and probably overdue. So, Barbara, you're also Relais and Chateau, triple A five diamonds, Forbes five star. There's nothing you haven't won now. So let's get into this incredible story. I mean, where did it all start? Where were you born and raised, and where did you get this palette from?
You know, that's the funniest question. That's the question most asked, and still difficult to answer. This is so funny that I was born and raised 7 minutes from here. Right up the street in South Boston, Mary Ellen McCormick Housing Project, which is still the oldest housing project in the country. Raised by a single mom. My father died a month before I was born, so I was the last Lynch.
Kid. How many siblings at that stage?
Seven. Six at that stage. Then my mother remarried. Now we have seven.
How many boys? How many girls?
Four boys, two girls.
And did they take care of you? Were you like spoiled being the little one?
No, because there's such an age difference. I think my oldest sister is almost 69. So, and my young, well, my sister who's closest in age to me is a recovering heroin addict, so she's pretty much out there. And my brothers, one left because my mother got remarried, and then the other two were just gone because they got married too.
Was it a typical Irish household?
Yeah, totally. I mean, typical for a Boston Irish,
right,
neighborhood. My neighborhood was quite interesting as well, because I lived next door to Whitey Bulger.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did you have any notion?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
How so?
Just because he was very public. And he also owned the Rotary liquor store, which is right up the street. He also owned Triple O's, which is the bar right next to my high school. Not my high school, but where my friends went to high school, Cardinal Cushion.
Mm-hmm. And did you go to Catholic schools?
I went to Catholic school. I started actually in a parochial school that was built because I was also a student at the height of forced busing, which meant desegregation. So take all the white students out of South Boston and put them in Roxbury, take all the blacks out of Roxbury and put them in South Boston. So it was very difficult time to be in school. So my mom put my sister and I into a parochial school that was named South Boston Heights Academy, basically for this purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't a really good student, so I was more like the class clown. Not a clown, I was like a leader.
Mm-hmm. An instigator.
An instigator, yes, I was an instigator.
Doesn't that surprise me? So you're growing up, and what's your view of the world? You have a single mom, lots of siblings, she gets remarried. At what age were you when she got remarried?
I was 7.
Oh.
Yeah, and she married a custodian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, growing up, I always thought he was a nice guy. I mean, who's going to marry a woman with 6 kids and so forth? But he turned out to be a major alcoholic and, you know, not a very good father for my sister.
Oh, you?
Can't say. Can't remember, really.
Uh-huh. Oh, because they had another baby.
Well, they had a baby. Yeah, John. He's a great kid, but there's other situations, I think, that I'm working on in my memoir that raped by Whitey Bulger and blah, blah, blah. Like, I...
You or your sister?
Mm.
You.
Mm. So, there's like a 10-year memory loss that I've been working on for a long... Well, since I was 45, so... it is remarkable how I came from here and got here.
What was your view of the world when you were little?
Up and down. I think, I had a great gang of friends, and I still have them to this day. And, like, the memoir is sort of dedicated to my mom and this gang, because we always took care of each other. Out of the 28 friends, 27 of us were just raised by our mothers. So, South Boston's a very blue-collar town, and mm-hmm. a lot has to do with the postal services here. Gillette Razor Company is here. Edison Electrical Company is here. There are lots of drinking. There's a bar on every corner.
Mm-hmm.
sort of insulated. We're in a peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
And Southeast is very tricky, you know. So Whitey Bulger is the mafia, and his brother is the Senate president for over 25 years.
The center president.
Senate president.
Oh, Senate president. Oh.
Yeah. So very mafia political.
Right.
And
why'd you stay in Boston?
Why did I stay in Boston? I actually love Boston. And I as a kid, I was one of those kids that, well, inner city kid, and my mother probably worked 2 or 3 jobs. So
was she a tough mom, a loving mom?
Oh, she was a tough mom. She was tough.
7 kids, you keep them in line.
Tough as nails, but from what I know, she was friendly, and she had a lot of friends too, and you know, many jobs. Mary Kay Cosmetics. She's pretty. She could have a sense of humor when she was in a good mood. But I have to say that I think her life was pretty rough. It wasn't what she thought it would be. To have a daughter who's a drug addict at the age of 12, to have 2 brothers in AA, and, you know, it's just...
Did you think that was normal life?
Oh, yeah, I did.
So what were your happiness moments? Where did you find happiness in those years?
Probably mostly with my friends, laughing and...
Do you hang out in the kitchen?
No. My mother? My mother's?
No, your friend's house.
No, none of them, you know, none of them really...
I don't mean cooking.
Oh, yeah, like I had one friend that her mother would, yeah, we'd sit in the kitchen.
Yeah.
But it was more like your parents want you out from, especially during the summer. You're out the door at 8 or you're doing housework. 8 a.m. and come back for supper. So that's a long time to be out on the streets. And mm-hmm. you just get creative because you get bored. And then, you know, who knows?
So at 16, what did you want to do?
Oh, well, 16, I was working. I was...
But what did you want to do? What were you working at? But what... Did you have dreams to...
I think at 12, I started talking myself into saying that I was a chef. Mm-hmm. And I think at 12, I realized if I could cook for a living, I'd always have a job. Because people are always going to eat or drink. And I don't know if you remember the show called The Jetsons, where they would just eat a pill. And then, you know, and I'm like, my God, I better learn how to cook before we become The Jetsons, or I won't have a job.
Had you gone to any nice restaurants by that time?
No, but I was working. I would cut out of school, but I would go and visit my mother, who was working at the St. Botolph Club, which is a private club on Commonwealth Avenue. And Mario Bonello was a L'Escoffier chef, which I couldn't even pronounce it then. Mm-hmm. I was 14, and I couldn't wait on tables yet, but I did make beds and stuff around the club. And then once I was able to wait on tables, I would work there pretty much every night.
So it was mainly just to make money?
Oh, yeah. I was all about making money. It's because I had to take care of my mother as well.
Because she...
Just couldn't make it. I mean, yeah. You know, yeah. I paid for my own dental when I was 15. You know, you want clothes, you got to work for it.
Right.
I used to shovel the tea in the winter.
What do you
the
mean?
The green line. So a city job.
Oh.
I'd work.
When you thought I'll be a chef, what did that mean? What kind of chef?
Oh gosh. You know, I loved cooking. My friend's brother had a little place right across from the Rabbit Inn that Whitey Bulger owned. And it was called the Soda Shack. So it was basically steak tips and steak and cheese subs and ice cream. But I loved working there. And I also worked at Brigham's, which I loved.
What did you love about it?
Making people happy.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like if you were good at something, and I remember Brigham's, I was a server. But none of the line cooks would ever show up, so I'd have to like grill cheese sandwiches, make burgers, go make an ice cream sundae, pour tea, remise. I had no idea what that was, the word remising. All I know is that I had the same customers pretty much four times a week, and you build a relationship. And so, I mean, they must have liked my grilled cheese, right? And they were kind, and I just think that actually cooking is nurturing. For me, it's nurturing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I could see that I made people happy. And when I started cooking, you know, more professionally, I could tell I was really natural at it. And it was like playing hockey. So then it was like a sport. Because you had to get the food out in a certain time, and you would just get crushed, like, for the first 25 minutes, and then you get 5 minutes to kind of clean up, and then do it again, so three turns.
So did you just, from then on, be a chef? Did you ever stop cooking and do something else?
No. In my dreams, I think I wanted to be a marine biologist, but I could never get through school. Mm-hmm. And then I wanted to be in the CIA. But then they needed to do a family back check, and I said, that's not going
to
be a good idea.
You wanted to be a spy.
I did.
Why?
Because I figured you could travel.
There were other ways to travel. You could have been a flight attendant, like most, you know.
That never even dawned on me.
You're an iconoclast, Barbara. You're an iconoclast.
That never even dawned on me. I go higher, you know.
The
there's more power.
And, wait, and a little rougher and riskier.
Yeah,
very
risky.
You're not risk averse, are you?
I guess I'm not.
No.
What am I going to have to? I had nothing to lose, really.
So, but you stayed with cooking.
I did. You know, I did stay with cooking.
Did you? Did you feel a family atmosphere in the kitchen? You know,
yeah.
That's what everybody, you know, a lot yeah. of people are drawn to that.
Yeah, I've had the most amazing time growing up in a kitchen with, you know, at Michaela's, when Michaela's first opened. Taught English was crazy, but I had the best friends on the line. One was Sarah Jenkins, Nancy Harmon, Jenkins' daughter. She would just make me laugh every day. I had no idea what I was doing. All I knew, I was reading Foods of Italy by Waverly Root mm-hmm. every night on the train. Every night. I must have read that book 3 or 4 times. Just to catch up.
And had you traveled much?
God, no. I've never been out of Southie. I was never... I think my mother... World. Oh, Florida. Is that Orlando?
Yeah.
So Orlando.
Yeah. Orlando.
That was it. And so my first trip to Italy, I thought, wow. All right, I'll go to Italy. I had a few American Express traveler's checks, and I borrowed a friend's credit card. And then I met Sarah in Italy, and that was
so
when
you,
I was...
Did you do it as a food trip?
Yeah, she invited me just to hang out for a couple of weeks or 2 weeks. And that was just so eye-opening. That was just a whole different world, a different culture. I actually thought everything would be in English, and here I am in the Centrale Milan, and I'm trying to get to Florence, and it's Firenze, but you have to go to La Chiusa. And I was just like, oh my God, where, you know, I couldn't find Sarah's brother for hours, and I was like, I'm never going to get to where I should be, because like, there's no way.
Was she going to Cortona?
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly.
I've been there.
Gorgeous, right?
Gorgeous, yes. So, you know, the kinds of food you do and everything that you've done is such a refined palate, wonderful taste. I'm sure when you started out, you didn't even know that kind of food existed. So where was the steepest learning curve for you?
What Mario Bonello was doing, Sweetbreads Under a Bell and Dover Sole, and I said that was the beginning of that. And the other part I loved about Mario was that it was a very affluential club. So Mr. Bell, who was in charge of Time magazine at that time, and all these Bostonians, it was just wow, you know, that's a whole different world you don't see in South Boston. And then I went to The Harvest, and that was right after, you know, Chris Lessinger and another group of chefs were famous after that. And that's when I learned how to pâtés and garmanger. And so I would just read constantly, like just read, go to the library. And also I had a great home ec teacher who kept on telling me to stay in the kitchen. And she gave me like all her life magazine, Lifetime cookbooks, and
The Richard Olney ones.
Yeah. And then also Julia Child was actually a member of the St. Botolph Club.
Oh, really? So Julia lived here.
She lived in Cambridge.
So did you cavort with her many times?
Well, a couple of times. I had a few parties with her in her house in Cambridge.
Because she was so protective and supportive of women.
Yeah.
In the industry. And here you are in her backyard. Did she go out of her way to help you?
No. I mean, the first time I called her was when I said to Mario, hey, I want to learn how to cook. What should I do? He said, call Julia Child. So I went phone book, called her. She answered. And I just went, oh, shit. I crank called Julia Child.
And then it
took me years
to
get the courage, because, you know, and she also loved intelligent women.
Yes.
And she had no patience if you weren't smart. So I think it was when I opened number 9, she came to the opening. She came for my 5th year anniversary with her GBH friends. Then I went to Jane Levine's bridal shower at Julia's house, you know, it's in many other events with Julia, but she was just an amazing woman. I just think she's amazing. I mean,
yeah, she was. So who was your mentor in those years? You know, it strikes me, you know, that here you have a mother you're taking care of. You've got all these siblings that have their own issues. You're living in a very tough environment. You're going to work, you know, you're doing your thing. Probably, you know, you're enjoying your friends. But did you have an adult in your life?
No, I didn't.
So, where did all this discipline, ambition...
It was to get out of the projects. It was to, like, I would read that book, Do What You Love and Money Will Follow, and The Road Less Traveled. But I never realized Do What You Love and Money Will Follow, and there was a cow on it, on the cover. So I thought, like, oh, I can go milk cows and I can make money, not realizing it's a cash cow. So I was so used to working, I would never think about myself. And then I tried a recipe one day from my mother's Good Housekeeping magazine, and it was shocking to me that it was actually a stir fry, and there were like 22 ingredients, and that somebody would actually make that. And so I tried it and loved it. And then that's when I just started talking to myself and saying, you can be a chef. And then working for Mario before, I was never in the kitchen with him, except for when I started serving tables. I never cooked with him. But again, I saw he was running a restaurant. He was running this club. There was the main dining room every night, club night. Lescoffier dinner in another room. Rhodes Scholar meeting upstairs in another room. So he had like five different rooms, all different dinners, and it was just two people in the kitchen, him and Gino. And like I just watched him and observed him, and he knew everything. Then I decided just to keep on reading as much as I possibly could, and kind of started to get out of Southie, because I guess my friends always made fun of me anyway. They always said I was different or, you know, beat to my own drum kind of thing. And then I came across a store on Newbury Street called the Trident Bookstore. And Anna Sorton was cooking. And she was like 18 and I was 22. So I would go every day for lunch, like soup, and just read all the books. Because I just I found out at 45 I have... no wonder why I couldn't retain any information, but the photos would just blow me away. But my first trip to Italy was where I felt like I want to do this, because what I felt in Italy was that you didn't have to have a title. You just had to make good pasta.
Mm-hmm.
And they lived their life of food. And good cuisine and hard work, and that's what I wanted to do.
We're going to take a break here. We'll be right back.
Great.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years, so it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Well, welcome back. You're listening to Chef's Story. I'm Dorothy Cann Hamilton, and today I'm in Boston at Menton with Barbara Lynch, who has just recently won the Outstanding Restaurateur from the James Beard Foundation for 2014. Her story is extraordinary. We're going to have to move on. When you didn't just go and open one restaurant. You opened restaurants, catering, diners, and multiple berths here. You hardly gave yourself a break.
Yeah.
And you kept them all like spinning plates going.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Well, why so many? I mean, why? They're fantastic. I mean, I don't know anyone like you. did you have a lot of partners to help you? Did you have someone saying, Barbara, we got to open another one? I mean, every time you did, you you really got press, you got attention.
Yeah, no, I didn't have partners. And I didn't even know how to write a business plan. I owed the IRS $75,000. I still live with my mother. It was just crazy. Who's going to believe in me, right? Like, I'm the type of person who drives a car. Why do you need a driver's license? So I break rules, I guess. I don't know. And I loved gambling back then, too.
You loved gambling?
I was a bookie in high school, and I used to win a lot of money at blackjack.
So you could count.
I could count. Yeah, I could count. I just felt, I think it was after I was at Galleria Italiana as a chef, I was ready to open my, after I got the Food and Wine Award, I felt like I was ready to open my own restaurant, which is pretty ballsy. Like, I don't know, I mean, I don't come from a financial background, but I do have common sense, and I do know what it takes to run a restaurant. And I didn't do it for money. I did it for, probably to prove to South Boston that I could do something, or I could be somebody, and I didn't have to be in the mafia. And I didn't have to be a crook. So I gave all that up to cook. Because it's legit.
Why did you feel that was such a passion to not be a crook? I mean, that sounds like a silly question. But if you're in that environment...
I just didn't want to be that. I didn't want to be in that environment. I just didn't want to. And I'm... You know, you remove yourself from the environment. It's like removing yourself from the eye of the storm.
Mm-hmm.
I would go back every once in a while. I mean, I dated a guy for 10 years. So when I went to go and visit him or, you know, hang out, you could see that they were just deteriorating. Mm-hmm. And they would do the same thing over and over and over again. And I hated it. And I hated doing the same thing every weekend. And I would say to myself, God, the world... there's people out there that are doing lots of other things during the weekend, like hiking and camping. I want to do that. There's got to be other normal families. Not everyone's hungover on the weekends. So I knew I wasn't in the right environment, and I wanted to get out. And by working at the St. Botolph Club and in Cambridge, which was very foreign for a kid in Southie, I mean, basil was exotic. Fresh basil was very exotic in South Boston. So I kind of liked that. It kind of gave me some power, like, I know more than you. Like, never, I would never go around and say that, but I actually enjoyed it. I enjoyed learning something, and cooking I could get.
Did you find a mentor? Did you find someone who took a special interest?
My high school teacher, she did. Yeah, I would have cut out of school in the first year. She went to my guidance counselor and just said she'll never stay in school unless she can take cooking for 4 years. And so they let me take cooking for home ec for 4 years. Never graduated, but because I was like 2 points shy, and I would have had to go to summer school, and it just wasn't on my agenda. And then I took a job, Martha's Vineyard. I worked on a boat, and then I came back and I worked in Cambridge, and then I met somebody who worked for Todd English, and then I joined Michaela's. And I saw, you know, Michaela Larson was amazing in the front of the house. Lots of energy. And the restaurant was in nowhere land. Like, it took me 2 hours to find this place while I was going to interview with Todd English. And I said, who the fuck would put a restaurant here? And he said, oh, God, she's sassy.
But he joked you.
He hired me, and it was a hit. I was a hit.
You were.
$16.99 and under, and I just fed off that. I fed off that I'm making people happy. And then I did. I plowed away for probably 15 years and worked and worked and worked.
So what was your goal?
My goal? My carrots. My carrots were... So I mastered Italian at Galleria Italiana. And then at number 9... Before I opened up number 9, I was in love with Ducasse. I loved what he had accomplished. 3 Michelin stars. I would look at his books, those big books,
yes.
And just see simplicity. Like he had it. There's three ingredients usually in his food, maybe five, but
perfect ingredients.
He was my goal, so I wanted to be in the Michelin at some point.
Do you ever say that to him? To this day?
No.
Interesting.
No. And then, I loved Robuchon for coming out of retirement and making big changes in France. Sitting at a counter, mm-hmm. and I just remember eating there and saying, "Oh my God, this is amazing!" And I remember eating at Taillevant for lunch, and I still remember like a rabbit pativier that I had. And so those were my mentors. I every time I made money, I'd buy a book, and then I would translate it into English if I could. But they inspired me to be like them. I never thought I'd get here, but that was my goal. So number nine opened, and then I was getting restless. It was about 5 years after that, and I was about to open another restaurant in the North End. I went through three stages of construction. I raised the money like that.
Who were your backers?
My backers. They're all, they pretty much built Boston. Arnold Hyatt, who is Stride Right Shoes.
So were they ate in your restaurant at Michaela's? Or?
No, well, they did eat at Michaela's. And I know when Mr. Hyatt invested with Lydia Shire, and I think he invested with Michaela. He also loved my story. Good, you know, Southy kid, doing good. And they wanted to help. And thank God they did, you know. And so, number nine, for me, my goal was, wow, no one gives me money. You know, I always had to, like, you know, being a bookie, I used to never call the numbers, and I'm like, woo-hoo, they don't know what they're doing. I gotta spend the cash on clothes. I love clothes. And so they gave me money. So I made it a point in my life to pay them back as fast as I could. And they're still my partners till this day. But in 3 years, I paid them back. And then number nine was a hit, and I got restless and wanted to do another restaurant. So I almost took the European over, which is an old institute, an Italian institute in the North End. And I knew what was going to happen with the Rose Park Greenway, and it's going to kind of connect Boston. And I wasn't thinking, what the hell am I doing? Irish kid in the North End, this will never work. And so I pulled out of that. And I lost money instead of, you know, I gave all that money back and just said I'm not doing it, and they were very happy that I wasn't. And then about 2 weeks later, I found B&G Oysters in the butcher shop, two empty corner spots in the South End. And
do you have this desire to keep opening?
No, I did then, but it was more nostalgic. It was very, very nostalgic. B&G is a memory of Kelly's Landing in South Boston. Fried clams, fried calamari, all in different batters. It's just delicious. Butcher Shop is my memory from Sarah Jenkins, hanging in Cortona, and you go up the top of that hill, and there's that little bodega where you go get your wine, your cigarettes, go to a wild boar butchering, selling rabbits with Mita at the market. You know, that was the Butcher Shop. And when I said to my investors, no, I want to open an oyster bar, and I also want to open a butcher shop. And they were like, great. And I was like, God, they're crazy. I don't even know how to butcher. So, back to the library.
And you were one of the first to do that. Mm. So was that experience in Italy that inspired you?
Yeah. And I probably got pissed off at the North End because they weren't really accepting me. And so I'm like, all right, I'm just going to open a butcher shop.
So are you feeling like a business person now? At that point?
Not yet.
No. When did your, you do so much. I can't, when did this multi-talented person started? Where did you learn these? Where did you learn your business skills, your management skills, your organizational skills?
In the fire, just thrown in the fire. So I would say my first 5 or 6 years, I really just focused on cooking, and I let the people I hire focus on the financials. And then when I decided to open up B&G in the butcher shop, I gave a third of my business to my general manager and my business manager, two men. So the day I signed the lease for B&G and butcher, I also found out I was pregnant. So here's another three. I'm going to do three things now. Give birth. Triplets. I would say 6 weeks after I had my daughter, I got sick, really sick. And I was supposed to be out of work for 12 weeks flat. And I mean, and so then my kitchen staff at B&G were going to walk out, and they didn't want to work with Garrett. And when I called Garrett and I called my other manager, oh, I shouldn't say Garrett, when I called my partners, none of them answered the phone. So then I got up off the deathbed and went straight to the source. And that's when I knew it comes from the top. And I've already been missing for about, and that's an awful long time. 5 weeks is a long time to not be involved. So I decided to get rid of them or buy them out or whatever they...
Were they just not showing up?
They were showing up. No, one guy wasn't. One guy was off in his like middle. I'm trying to give reviews or, you know, health insurance, and I could never get him on the phone. And he's getting paid. And here we are working our asses off, right, to succeed. And then the other partner just wanted to change everything. He wanted to rip the case out of the butcher shop. Da, da, da. So then it just dawned on me that they don't get it. They're not seeing the vision. And
they're not partners.
And they're not partners. And where do they think they get this power? This is power. So I got rid of them. And then I, ballsy as I am, decided to open up Plum Produce, a catering company, and Stir. And I realized that the reason I couldn't read my P&Ls and my budgets is that they were so fucked up. And they were designed by those two men. And it was, you know, you're looking at a year, which is glazed. That's just way too long. So then I ripped all that up and started from scratch again.
This and is my dyslexic team. ADD Barbara, right? Who, you know, just takes it on in ultimate common sense. And no, how many hours a day are you working? Mm.
Okay, 18. I mean, you know, you start at 9 and you end up 2 in the morning.
I've had time to get pregnant.
I know, right? Amazing, right? I think I almost killed my husband. I think we had to have, you know, a couple of times there. And he's older. He was 65, believe it or not. Yeah.
So, your daughter.
Marchesa Fiorella Petri. Map of Ireland all over.
And... were you ready for motherhood? I mean, it seems like you were so...
I don't think so, but...
Who is?
Right? I don't think I... I mean, I know I did. I definitely didn't bond with her. I think, and also I had her, and a month later I turned 40. So at that time, you know, you're a busy chef, and I'm still... doesn't dawn on me that I'm a businesswoman now. I'm still that chef owner, right? Mm-hmm. And now I'm a mom. And still work. I was at work 2.5 weeks later. She's in a wine box. You know, you just go through it. You go through it. I have an incredible staff. I have an incredible team who's been through this with me. And I'm just not stopping. And I think I started bonding with my daughter. At age one, two. It was really hard first couple of months. Breastfeeding and trying to work And also, you're 40, so you had a lot of independence, and you had a lot of free time, and now all of a sudden you don't. And the restaurants probably were more fun for me than motherhood. But now, you can't. I don't have enough time for her. I just love her.
How old is she now?
10.
What a great age. Oof. Now, were you at the Cherry Bomb conference?
Mm-mm.
There was a conference in New York about a month ago, and Cherry Bomb's a female mm-hmm. magazine for female chefs, and they had Suzanne Gowen and Gabrielle Hamilton talking about the challenges of being a mom.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's a lot of people out there that are considering, can I do this profession and be a mom? What's your take on that?
Just do it, because no matter what, you're going to always, I don't know, you're a mom. So you're still, no matter what, going to worry if you're going to be a good parent.
Yes.
I mean, I'm still concerned that that's my concern, you know.
Right.
So
do
it. If you know, like, it's not going to change whether you're home every day and every night. Or you're working. I mean, you know, this morning she called me and she said, congratulations, Mommy, on the award. I saw it in the newspaper.
This is...
A 10-year-old.
Yeah, this is 3 days later.
Yeah.
So you never told her?
No. No. Charlie did. But the fact, you know, and kids are busy. She's always busy. You know, when you talk to them on the phone, yep. Oh, here, you want to talk to Dad? You know, like... But for her to say that to me, it was just... amazing, because she understands that I have a career, and she loves it, and I'm successful at it. So why, if you have that feeling that you're going to be a successful chef, restaurateur, businesswoman, why would you not want to do that to make your kids proud of who you are?
Does she ever resent the hours that you put in here?
Oh, she could. She could. I didn't resent the hours that my mother wasn't home. Maybe I resented a little bit because I wasn't protected, but I'm going to protect her no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Does she come to the kitchen?
Does she
look at the restaurant as her home too?
Oh, yeah. Oh, we have Friday night date nights with all our friends, and they all Sportello. Last week we had pasta, l'abattoir, and arts and crafts at my apartment, and... Yeah, she loves being in the kitchen because she knows she's going to spend a lot of time with me in the kitchen. I mean, she can fillet salmon, she's cleaned mussels, she makes scrambled eggs.
You know, is she your only child?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was talking to Rick and Deanne Bayless, and Lainey was there, their daughter, and she's 23 now. And I just turned around, people didn't know she was at the interview, and I said, Lainey, how did you feel about that? And she said, you know, I was an only kid. I loved it. They mm-hmm. were my brothers and sisters when I went to the restaurant,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So, in a sense, could it be that it's almost a perfect environment if you're going to be a single, a mom, a working mom with a single child?
Oh.
There's nothing more loving and nurturing than a kitchen.
And how many characters do you have? As aunts and uncles.
Really?
Straight, gay, black, Asian, old, young, professionals. Like, you know, that, she sees that. And I love that. Like, that's a world for her.
Mm-hmm.
These are real people. And I think it's incredible.
And it's a support.
This is her family. Auntie Kitty, that's my wine director, Kat Saleri. We've been working together for 25 years. As a little girl, she used to love going over Kat's house. It's like 30 years of scarves and opera, and, you know, there's a character. And her godfather owns a restaurant, so she's very used to restaurants. And so if you... I depended on... When I said thank you to my mentors and my colleagues and my peers that night, I meant it. Because I tried to stay in that community because that community supports, and that community feeds you, and you inspire, and you want to be as good, if not better, but you want to continue to raise the bar on this community so that we can continue to grow. So I also think it's important that kids can cook. Like, I totally think children, when we lost home back in schools, we lost a generation, so...
Yes.
It's important.
Okay, we're going to take another break. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back. You're listening to Chef Story. I'm Dorothy Cann Hamilton, and today our guest is Barbara Lynch. And I'm up in Boston at her Relais and Chateau and much heralded Menton restaurant.
And if you're up in Boston, she's got a slew of restaurants, but I think Menton, to me, is my favorite. But I have fights with friends who like Nine Park.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there are Nine Park
groupies.
You know, groupies. So Barbara, you know, if I said to you when you were 12, who's Barbara Lynch? I think I know what the answer would be.
What would it be?
I'm a South Boston, you know, girl.
Yeah.
And I live in this neighborhood, and I'm one of these kids.
Yeah.
And don't mess with me.
Right. Knuckles Lynch.
Knuckle Flinch.
Knuckles Lynch.
Oh, Knuckles Lynch. Is that what they called you?
Yeah.
You know what? It's there.
Very good.
If I said, who are you today? How do you, you know, I have this great friend, you know, and I want to introduce you. You know what? Do you like Isabella Rossellini?
I love.
She's my friend.
She is?
Yes. So Isabella, pretend Isabella's here.
Yeah.
I say, Isabella, meet my friend Barbara Lynch. And she goes, hello, Barbara. Who are you? What do you do? What, you know, how would you describe yourself to her?
I would probably go, hi. Plus, I'd probably faint because she's beautiful. I'm Barbara Lynch, and what do you do? Chef. I'm a chef, and I own restaurants. Chef, restaurants.
But then we're talking, and you know, we're being friends, and she said, "Tell me, what's your passion in life? Are you like, what? You know, you're at the top of your profession now.
Yeah.
So, what's next for you? What excites you? Where do you think your life's going?
Oh my God, my path is just. Still on my path, but
where's the path?
Feeding people.
Mm-hmm.
So I designed a great food product that I just met with Michelle Obama.
Which food product?
It's dehydrated. It's called Barbara Lynch Made, and it's three types of. So it's a summer pack, a mushroom pack. In a winter pack, and then next year it's onions and corn, kale chowder. Everything is dehydrated, slow, no chemicals, no sugars. All you do is boil water and add, and you have instant vegetable soup. You can add proteins to it, you can add broths, you can just reconstitute it with boiling water and add it to salads and sandwiches, and there's just a whole new book coming out with just dehydrated foods. This food can stay in your pantry for 100 years. That's the shelf life.
100 years.
It's like astronaut food, but done very, very well.
It's
not
like
diced. I don't know if I have any pictures on it. But so I decided.
So would you say you're an entrepreneur?
Oh, God, yeah. I guess I'm an entrepreneur. I didn't like the word serial entrepreneur because it's just too close.
Yes, right. Think of like oatmeal cereal or...
Yeah, you know, yeah, exactly.
Kind of cereal entrepreneur.
Oh, yeah, I have books on how to make cereals. That will be another part.
So you're a writer as well.
I have a memoir coming out, yeah. And
why did you do the memoir?
I think I had to. I have to get over this chapter. I have to get over the past so that this next...
The young past?
Yeah, so that the next... my next life can start. I'm 50. I want to do it better. I want to do it different. I want to do it smarter.
Do what?
Work smarter. Create more. I feel like I don't have a lot of time left. And... I do love inventing, creating stuff. Like, I created all the concepts I can. It's like I can't come up with another opera. Can't do it. I'm done. Now I can take what I've learned. Oh, and I'm branding myself. So I'm about to take what I've built and open more.
Why?
Because I feel that I want to continue to grow the company. but I don't want to be in the kitchen. So what I want to do is take, you know, the chef that was at B&G for 7 years and offer him a restaurant and as a managing partner. He's getting married, he wants to have a family.
Is that because you love your staff so much you want to give them opportunity? Or is the thrill of growing and the thrill of a great idea something that gives you happiness?
No. This is two things. I love the idea of giving them an opportunity, setting them up for success. I know how difficult it is to open a restaurant. I just want to be mostly their advisor. And I'll tweak them. They're not going to be completely like B&G. Actually Surf and Turf, so I'll take B&G and the Butcher and put them together. I actually like coming up with the names. It's almost like giving birth, and then you nurture it, and then you...
So it is the creative process.
Yeah, I guess so. And then eventually I'm going to... I mean, the bottom line, I think, is my 10-year plan is to have a... I want a place in Ireland, sort of like a Relais and Chateau property, yet agro-turismo, hospitality school, where...
Like Ballymallow?
Like Ballymallow, exactly. Mm-hmm. But a little bit more... she's brilliant, mm-hmm. right? So very much like Ballymallow.
But maybe more Relais and Chateau?
More Relais and Chateau.
Upscale.
Yeah.
She's rustic. She's beautifully rustic.
Beautifully rustic. But, you know, I didn't take any of the classes. I just, you know, cooked with her.
Lusted over the gardens.
Gardens are amazing, right? Mm. So then that just killed me. I was like, oh my God, but we can have a botanist, a botanical, like all the seaweed. I make my own creams out of seaweed and stuff.
Have you ever failed?
Yeah. Not miserably, but yes.
But, you know, how many things have you opened? 10? 12?
Plum Produce. Okay, so failure. It's good to fail.
It is.
Plum Produce, I closed. It was too pretty, too beautiful, and I realized people really don't cook, at least during the week. But I thought it would succeed because it was right next to the butcher shop. Mm-hmm. So instead of... selling myself the produce back, I was dehydrating it. So here comes my new business.
Right. So, you know.
6 years later.
Out of the sow's ear, right?
Timing is everything.
And you're meeting with Michelle Obama on it. I mean, you don't just create a product, girl. You take it to the moon.
Well, you want to give birth, and you want them to be the best, right?
Right. So
now I'm going to Japan to work with Caroline Kennedy. So something's in the air with this political shit.
First of all, tell us how you got to Michelle Obama.
Oh, it was the Let's Move campaign, yeah. And Sam.
Yeah, Cass.
Invited me to speak with Hugh Atchison.
Uh-huh.
And we did, so we were on a panel, and that was it. And then went to have dinner with Sam and bunch of these other guys who actually sponsored the Let's Move campaign, mm-hmm. Told Sam about the product, sent him some product, mm-hmm. and some of it discouraged me because it was the ex-vice president of Coca-Cola, which I know you need money, mm-hmm. and it was also sponsored by Walmart. Mm-hmm. That don't scream health to me, but I'm not completely discouraged because I think they do have the power to change for healthier eating and so forth. Mm-hmm. So that's how I met. And he said, Michelle will just love this,
How would Michelle Obama allow them to be there if there wasn't something afoot in those corporations that she felt had a line of truth to it?
Yeah. How do you feel about that?
Well, you know, we were talking about this expo in Milan, mm-hmm. and on the head of the American Pavilion, and we have to go after sponsorship dollars. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I feel that I always hate when someone broad brushes something. So it's like corporate America is here and, you know, slow food is over there.
Yeah.
And the side of the angels is on slow food. The side of exploitation is on the corporations. And it's not that way. I mean, you know, and if who who are the, you know, when that doctor invented that bottle of Coca-Cola 150 years ago.
Right.
Did people become obese in 150 years ago?
No.
So.
No, I know.
Right. So that's one thing. So if you go and you read, because I try to read up on these companies that are coming in as sponsors, you see that they are trying to accommodate what is new and responsible. And you can't turn a huge ship around overnight. And, you know, I was impressed that Coca-Cola will not advertise to kids under 12. Mm-hmm. And if there is a market with more than 30% under 12, they don't market in that area at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, like on TV, you know, you're never going to see them on cartoons. So, taking that step in the right direction, I think we should try to encourage and applaud. And when Michelle Obama's there, yeah, and you're there with Kale,
it was a good thing. It was just a good thing for me because it kind of pissed me off enough to sit in my room and read about the government.
What
and the federal government subsidiaries since 1930 subsidizing the schools, I think that needs to change. I think a dollar, or maybe now 79 cents a kid, $5.79 for an elderly person, federally subsidized, is way too late. It just needs to switch.
Mm-hmm.
So that kid isn't obese, and I mean, you make it a state's choice. I don't think the rules of the government need to change. And
oh, for sure.
So
the eyes of the government need to be opened.
Yes.
And say, if you're going to only allow 79 cents to feed a child,
mm-hmm,
you can't feed them well. And you know what you have to do is give them satisfaction, and fat and sugar and salt, mm-hmm, are more satisfying than protein and carb.
But it's such a cyclical thing. I mean, you know, that's where I get, you know, my sister's a heroin addict. She goes into a meth clinic. Insurance can't pay after 3 weeks. She's out in the streets again. Boom, then she's back in. Cyclical, cyclical, cyclical. And I see it over and over and over again.
Mm.
Whether I'm in the projects or, you know, I think that's where some of that strength comes in, because you need to break barriers. And if I'm a part of breaking a barrier, then I'll be really happy. And I am not knocking Coca-Cola and Walmart. I'm not. It's not. The Food Network is horrible, and it isn't, because it reaches so many people.
Mm-hmm. So what was it like being with Michelle Obama and having her... dynamic?
She's definitely dynamic. I guess I'm not completely sold. I think I'd care more if it was Meryl Streep or Isabella Rossellini sitting in front of me, because I think they're brilliant. I think they're smart. I think they can make changes. I almost feel bad because she can do this and promote, but it doesn't feel like it's effective yet,
mm-hmm,
because it's not going to come from all of us who just traveled there to cook or to represent. And it's like, you know, the health department of different, it just didn't make sense to me, but I guess it's a start. But I wish we could have a stronger political team that could knock off the GMO bullshit and the federal subsidies and just rip it up and start from scratch.
But that can't happen.
I know.
So, do you think chefs can, what can chefs do to play a role of responsibility? You know, it's kind of interesting. You said that you learned to be a restaurateur because you had so much common sense. And really, business is common sense.
Common sense.
Common sense and hard work.
The only problem with business and banking is the language. It's just not simplified. It's not in layman's terms. They make it harder for you to try to, especially banking,
to understand.
Yeah.
But getting back to this, we're, you know, if there is going to be a step forward in improving the diet of the whole world, it isn't just an American problem. Mm-hmm. Now, how can chefs take a leadership role other than calling out, you know, we don't want this? I think we have to be a lot more proactive and a lot more intelligent. And you're such a out of the box thinker.
I love being out of the box.
And I think
so.
You can come up with solutions.
So this is what I want to do.
What do you want to do?
My end is a place called Shop. And then you could come in and you could buy your dairy, your cream, cheeses, your eggs, your yarn, your wool, your grains, your pasta, your bread, all that made, your bees on the roof, all your seaweed, healthy powders, dulse, and there was more. There's more. Mm-hmm. But also, everything is made behind the shop. So you hire a lot of people. So people have jobs, and then you sell it from the shop. And everything is made right there.
And where is the shop located?
Well, right now, I'm trying for Ireland, and it's not going to be in Ireland. And if it isn't in Ireland, I might have to do it in California. I just want to build the pilot first.
Mm-hmm.
And I might want to pair up with a partner.
Mm-hmm. So it's a farm to shelf.
Farm to shelf. Like, definitely. And then, you know, the chickens as well. And then there's a smokehouse. And then there's, you know, beef and lamb.
So you have a holistic
approach.
It's out there, but really. You need land to do that.
That's what I mean. Land, yes.
So if you're in an urban setting.
Okay, so in 1860 is when the cities were built. Our cities were built around farmers markets. Like the Borough Market in London, you could still buy you can buy a hare hanging, you can buy a cow, a half a cow, you can buy cheese, all under a railroad station. So that city was built around food and restaurants, farmers markets.
I guess, you know, I think the contribution for the chef.
Yeah.
I think we will all be healthier if we ate fresher food.
Yeah.
And to get fresher food, it needs to be available, easy, and affordable.
Yeah. So then the urban planning comes in, where you need to, you know, you need to look at all this desolate land. And you need to work with your mayors and governors and urban planners for the city,
mm-hmm.
to see what we can start. So that part of this inner city down here, when you're getting out of work and so forth, you don't have to hop in your car to go grocery shopping. You come and shop. It's almost like Eataly, but not as confusing as Eataly.
Or entertaining.
And packed and entertaining. This is serious stuff, right?
Yeah.
And there's a test kitchen in here. There's a science lab in here. There's also a hospitality program where entrepreneurial, you're going to learn to be an entrepreneur. That's where the agroturismo comes in if you want a vacation.
Oh, I see. So this is more
artisans.
An artist. There are people in there. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't want to say this is the wrong analogy, but a small, beautiful agricultural Disney World, where you go in and you can really see, be excited, and actually, can you learn there?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So you're going to have, you know, beautiful fruit trees and jam making, and it's kind of all there, yeah.
You ever see yourself moving from Boston?
Yeah.
Ireland or California? But you keep coming back here, no?
Well, no, you know, now of course I have to, but because I have a daughter here. But I think my ultimate dream is to 4 months Europe, 4 months Boston, 4 months California. And I kind of set that goal a while ago. And first I thought I wanted to be in France. And then I went to Ireland, and I'm like, you know, it just makes more sense for me to open a Verlaine Chateau in Ireland. I'm Irish, for Christ's sakes. I'm not Italian, and I'm not French. I just feel like I could do a lot more in Ireland than I can in France or Italy, but I'm not sure yet. So, like, it feels good right now. But I know that's the ultimate is four, and four. I can't keep on being in restaurants.
Well, I'm glad
at age 60
to hear that you're gonna stop driving yourself to death working. We're gonna have to come to a close here. But you know, you just won the top award of all awards at the Beard Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that you would like if the other chefs to say when they're not talking to your face but behind your back? What's the one or two words you hope they use? They're saying, "Hey, Barbara won the award. She's..."
Hopefully they're saying I'm outstanding. And some brilliant. I like that word, brilliant.
I think they're saying it, Barbara.
Really?
I know they're saying it.
Oh my God.
You're outstanding.
I think brilliant would like make me not brilliant because that's like I want to say brilliant because it's like she's got the balls to do it. She's not going to let anything stop her. And, you know, I would never keep on growing if I felt like I was losing quality and consistency and turnover was high.
It's not.
I wouldn't do that. I couldn't. So, like, if everything's going, I still feel pretty good about let's continue this path that I'm on.
Okay. Ten
years from now.
We're doing another interview.
All right. All right. Maybe we should do a half. Five.
Oh, five. I'll take five.
Let's do five.
Let's do five.
We're working pretty fast here. Right
really?
Now.
Thanks for joining me today. I know how busy you are. And this has just been wonderful.
Thanks, Dorothy.
Thanks.
I hope I didn't overwhelm you, but
you did.
Okay, that's fine. Well,
you did. I'm coming back in 5 years because I'm too overwhelmed. But I want to thank our listeners, and I want to thank Robin Cohen and Jack Inslee, my producers. We'll see you next time.
Heritage Radio Network is a member-supported nonprofit organization broadcasting over 30 live shows a week. To learn more and donate, visit our website or connect with us on iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram for more. Thanks for listening.